I'm right back at it with my brother J Dutch. Fresh new track for the family, what the fuck? My man Big Derek, but we call him old school. About to get up on the mic and straight up act school. Ain't no fiction here, cause we only talking facts. If he's talking about the bucks, he don't cut him no slack. No need to waste time and let's get right to it. What the fuck podcast ain't nothing to it but to do it. Yeah. About to turn it over to my man old school with the what the fuck podcast. Check it, yo. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck. Yeah. It's what the fuck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's what the fuck.
Welcome to the whatthebuck.net podcast. We'd like to start out with thanking the people who help us do all of the things we do in the community as well as online. First and foremost, we'd like to thank Bill Curry Ford and Bill Curry Cares, our Platinum Tailgate sponsor and great friends. We'd like to thank Steakhouse Elite, providing Kobe crafted beef to your home and your tailgates. They are amazing. If you haven't had their burgers, you've got to try them, and you can try them at our tailgate at 3316 West Ohio Avenue. As well as Tito's Vodka, keeping you lubricated for our tailgates throughout the entire season and helping you have a great time. We'd also like to thank Pepin Distributing, providing our beer and a lot of fun with our team can, the Buccaneers team can. Pepin Distributing, keeping our kegs going and our excitement happening at the tailgates. All right, good evening. Welcome, everybody, to Keel and Curly. We are fortunate tonight to join Pewter Report. Scott Reynolds and Mark Cook down there at the end of the table asked us to come out and have a wonderful Buccaneer podcast roundtable at this lovely establishment. We also were fortunate, and some of you who aren't in the podcast circuit may not know who the other gentleman in here is. Like, we bookended them. There was another podcast that was around for about 2.5 years, I believe, right, Chris? Is that about right?
2.5. That's all we made it.
Buck's Brief Podcast did a great job. He has gone on to bigger, better, more domestic things. But every once in a while, we're able to pull him back out of retirement. And for an event like this, of course, he was able to waddle over from North Lakeland or wherever he lives, South Lakeland. South Lakeland, right?
Central Lakeland.
Well, whatever. Okay. So we're here tonight with Cumbie Scott area. And Mark to talk about the Buccaneers game. We're going to talk a little bit about the Falcons game that they just won. And then get you sort of a preview to what's coming up with the Arizona Falcons game. But I want to pass the mic over to Scott Reynolds.
You just said Arizona Falcons.
I'm sorry. Arizona Cardinals. They're
cut,
all birds.
Start over.
No, we don't cut. We don't cut. We just keep going through. They're all birds, and they're all going to be beat birds. But I want Scott to get a chance to welcome everyone as well and tell them about the happy hour we had and about Keel and Curly, the relationship you guys have, et cetera, and what other folks can do coming out here.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is a fantastic place, whether it's date night, whether it's, you know, you want to come out here on a Saturday or Sunday and chill on the weekends. And just have a beer, have a cider, have a wine. Keel and Curly Winery and Two Henry's Brewing Company, they do it all. They also have Madman Ciders here. I've already got Mark Cook hooked on the elderberry cider.
No.
Yes.
Yes. Can yes. I have another one, please?
Yes. And that's easy to do. They've got the mango, they've got pineapple, apple cider. They've got all the varieties of ciders that you could possibly imagine. And I'm having a tasty Jameson Steamboat, which is a dark brown ale. It has, I think, bested my all-time favorite, which is the Two Henry's Gilded Age Golden Lager. So this is now my new favorite, and we're going to slide the Gilded Age down to number 2. But this place first started as a winery. Joe Keel is a blueberry farmer, 10 years in the business. You can see out here they do the Blueberry Festival out in the springtime around the draft. And they've got fruit-infused wine that you can find at Publix, at Total Wine, at ABC, and all of the favorite Tampa Bay area stops that you can get that. Two Henry's Brewing Company has really taken off over the last couple of years, and you can find that in those same places as well as some convenience stores around town. And just happy to be out here, happy to have a good crowd tonight, and we're excited to talk some Bucks football.
Well, thank you, Scott. We're going to mess with the settings just a little bit here while we get things going. We got people tuning in from around the world as well online, so I want to make sure that they can hear what's going on. So if we get a little feedback, I want to apologize in advance. All right, so let's start with Atlanta. Now, Scott, and Pewter Report, you and Mark Cook and your entire staff do a great job of covering the Bucks. You have for as long as I've been a Bucks fan, which is my entire life. So, you know, the Bucks this year, there was an article that came out, and you'll know who actually wrote it because I don't pay attention to important things like that because I'm not a real journalist, but there was a lot of conversation about lack of excitement around the Bucks, and that this town was dead on the team, and it got a lot of play because it's controversial, and that's what some journalism has devolved into. But
what we noticed on the podcast last week and what Mark wrote an article about today is there's an excitement in town right now.
Yes, there is. And I'll tell you what, I believe, and we both predicted the Buccaneers to beat the Falcons. I think a lot of Buccaneer fans were expecting that. And there would have been a letdown had the Buccaneers stubbed their toe in Atlanta in week one. This was a winnable game. This was a must-win game to get this team headed in the direction that I believe it can go, which is the playoffs this year. So from a lot of standpoints, the fact that it's a division game, you know, it's an important game to get under your belt. Had the Buccaneers lost, I think that would have been a really big story in Tampa Bay because so many people expected them to win. And it's nice, let's put it this way, how refreshing is it, Derek, to have a Sunday where you're going in expecting to win and then to have the team accomplish that mission? It's been a while. Probably since the Gruden years.
It has been a long time.
When you walked into a game and you said, yep, the Buccaneers are going to win this, and then at 4 o'clock, yep, they did it. You know, and I think we're getting back to that now with Dirk Cutter.
No, and that's a great point. The idea of the expectation of winning. And, you know, Mark and I were talking a little bit before the broadcast because I had this, let's just say, Keelan Curley-like influenced evening in my hot tub. And I thought going into the season, I had this strange feeling. And I'm not a sunshine and rainbows guy when it comes to records. I had a feeling that this team could go up and beat Atlanta and then go out and beat Arizona and beat literally coming back to Raymond James, 2-0, riding a hot streak. And I have never felt that in recent history. And it looks like that's really something that could happen.
It is. And I think it's because Arizona underwhelmed in their week one loss to the New England Patriots, especially with Jimmy Garoppolo as the starting quarterback. It's one thing if Tom Brady comes out in week one and beats you at your place, but another thing for Jimmy Garoppolo to come out and take care of business and make the plays that he did. And I believe that Jameis Winston is a better quarterback and certainly a more advanced quarterback in year two than Jimmy is without getting hardly any playing experience last year as a rookie. Or I should say, he's entering his third year. He's hardly played behind Tom Brady. So, I switched my prediction. I originally had them losing to the Cardinals on the path to 10-6. I fully believe that this team can win out in Arizona. And I think they can win for one big reason. Because the mindset on offense is to get points and then step on the throat of their opponents. And what Dirk Cutter has done reminds me so much of how Bill Belichick plays football up in New England. Uses the two tight end sets. There's not many teams that do. The Buccaneers and the Patriots are really about the only teams that will come out in that formation. And we saw Cam Brate get his catches. We saw ASJ only get one catch. It was a big one to really put the full throttle on the Buccaneers' performance. But when you look at spreading the ball around to nine different receivers, including Russell Shepard on the end around, who are you going to stop on this offense? Are you going to stop Mike Evans? Are you going to stop Doug Martin? Well, those guys kind of got taken away a little bit, especially Evans in the first half. But the Buccaneers still put points on the board, still moved the ball. And I think that the diversified offense plus the aggressive play-calling mindset of Dirk Cutter to say, yep, we're going to win the coin toss. We're going to take the ball to start the third quarter. And we're going to go get points regardless of how much time is left on the clock in the first half. And then we're going to come out with the ball and score again. And so by the time the Buccaneer defensive players left the field, when the Buccaneer defenders left the field, the Falcons had the lead. The next time they took the field, the Buccaneers had a double-digit lead. That's huge.
Yeah, and that quick strike is just something we've not witnessed.
Yes, and I think now what we've seen is even last year with the defensive-minded head coach in Lovie Smith, you've seen the Buccaneers kind of take their foot off the gas a little bit before halftime. Well, we've got a lead. We got a 3-point lead. We'll take that into the half. You know, well, we're down a couple points. We're just going to play it safe. We'll take a knee into the half. John Gruden told me, and this is one thing that stuck with me from the Gruden era, you know, you have an NFL team has on average 10 to 12 offensive possessions per game. That's it. You got to make every single one of those count and try to score in every single one, especially in a league that is typically decided by field goals, 3 points or less. Look at week one. Look at all of the games that were decided by 1 point. So you're trying to tell me that you've got a possession right before halftime. Maybe you have a minute left. Maybe you've got 30 seconds left. And maybe you have a timeout. And you're not going to try to to push the ball down the field and get in field goal range and get points on the board. That's a loser mentality. That's why Lovie Smith is no longer here. That's why I called for him to be fired last year. And that's why I wanted Dirk Cutter, to be honest with you, because he's an aggressive, offensive-minded head coach. And we saw that in week one with two touchdowns back-to-back before the Falcons could catch their breath. Dirk had his foot on the Falcons' throat.
Well, and that aggression is something that I think a lot of Bucs fans wanted, and it's a double-edged sword in some cases, right? The conservative mindset has certainly come under a tremendous amount of fire here in Tampa and other places. But even during the game, in a game that I thought was pretty aggressively called and well-executed, you saw on Twitter fans going, oh, here comes that Lovie Smith offense again, which is a misnomer in so many ways it frustrates me. But the concept that if the guy's not throwing nines constantly, he's not an aggressive coach, right? That's just simply not true. Now, the idea of playing to win versus playing not to lose is one of those sort of time-tested concepts in sport. And as a Bucs fan, we are not familiar with that concept of going for the jugular, right? Coming out after half and going there and taking advantage of this team. Then you have a little bit of a adversity, and I think a lot of us had the feeling, oh, here we go again, right? This is where it's going to start. The wheels are going to come off the wagon, and I get to hear Kirk Cousins echo in my head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Once they built the lead?
Yeah. And so then the defense is out there, and they're starting to slow down a bit. The Falcons are moving the ball. They're getting the ball down in the red zone where the defense toughened up. But what do you think, and this is open to everyone on the panel as well, what do you think that we can attribute? And it's one win, guys, right? We're not in the Super Bowl. It's one victory. But what can you attribute that change in demeanor on both sides of the ball?
Well, I actually asked Jameis about that today in his press conference at noon, about, being aggressive and the difference in last year when he said he wanted guys to not like to lose, to hate losing, and there wasn't enough of those guys on the team. So I asked him about that in the press conference today, and he said, it's definitely, there's a different feeling. He said on the sideline, even when things started going bad, even after the interception, even after Atlanta started coming back, nobody hung their heads and got down about it. It was the same mentality from start to finish. And he said, that's Dirk Cutter. And I think if you ask Dirk Cutter, he's going to say that's Jameis Winston, or a lot of the teammates, a lot of his teammates. And of course, a lot of the fans would say the same thing. But I think it's a great combination. I think these are, this is a good combination of two talented people, Dirk Cutter running an offense and being a leader on a football team, and then having that same mentality that Dirk has as the guy that's in charge running the offense. So the combination of both, I don't think you can put your finger on just one specific thing. But Jameis did say it was different because there was still excitement on the sideline. There was still confidence on the sideline. And as I was telling you earlier, I don't know that the Buccaneers are going to go to Arizona and win, but they can. And I wouldn't have said that last year or in last several years. And as I also mentioned, one of the most dangerous things is a team that doesn't know that they can't lose. A confident football team. Right now, this team hasn't lost yet. They're 1-0. They have a confidence in their team. They have a confidence in the defense now, and they have confidence in special teams. They don't, I don't think that they are thinking about losing. They're thinking about how they're going to win a game. And that mentality change is what's going to have to continue to grow throughout this season, because they could easily fall back into it, because a lot of these guys have been conditioned to lose based on being on this team the last several years. Jameis is willing this team and trying to change that mentality. If they continue to do that this year, they're not going to go 16-0. We know that. That's okay. But like Jameis said today, our goal is to win more games than we lose, and we'll see what happens at the end of the season.
Now, Chris, we brought you back out of retirement from Bucs Brief, and you've had a chance to watch the game as a fan again without having the laborious requirements that everyone up here has in different capacities, right? Watching the game multiple times, not having to follow people on Twitter and respond to everything they say. But I look, and you're still doing all of that same stuff. So what is it like to be retired and not doing anything different except for not doing your show?
I still watch the Cardinals-Patriots game three times. Still. I think Scott touched upon it as well. The key moment for me, and I think football is a game of milestones, and having those milestones. And if they call the timeout and the Bucs offense does not score at the end of the first half, maybe we're having a different – we're talking about a completely different story here. But the fact that that timeout was called, I think it changed the momentum of the game. When they drove down, the Charles Sims touchdown, really energized the team. They come out again. They get the ball at half, being aggressive, drive down again. Then the offense kind of stalls, but who steps up? Then it's the defense who steps up, and they close the game again, just like they did in Atlanta last year. He doesn't get the credit for it enough. Gerald McCoy, again, makes a big play, bats the ball down. It seems like game one, I understand it's one win, but it's an overall team win when the defense was struggling a little bit, the offense stepped up. When the offense was struggling a little bit, the defense stepped up. So I think you can be happy about it. But again, it was a game that I expected the team to win. Whole different story when you go on the road to Arizona, a very tough stadium to play in, under a fantastic coach who's coming off of a big loss. We'll see what happens here on Sunday at Arizona, which game I think, Derek, that you're going to.
I am. I'm fortunate. I'm going to go to that game. I'm going to be in Arizona, Kansas City, and then Dallas this year for my away games. But, you know, as a Bucs fan here, let's spend a little bit of time looking at what we have as Play-Doh on this team, right? We got Jameis Winston is obviously the bell of the ball. The guy can seemingly do nothing wrong here, which is tremendous. Many of us have gotten a chance to get to know him at a personal level. And I can tell you this, it's just as real there as it seems. It's not one of those things where it's a veneer, right?
That's
this
true,
kid
yes.
comes in, owns
no
a room, and he connects to you as a human being. It is really one of the most impressive things I've seen out of a young athlete in a long, long time. But this team has assembled a set of talent that if you're not in Tampa, you may not know about, but you better pay attention to, because you've got, now in Atlanta, who seemed to me, and you guys all did the film work too, I saw a lot of single high, I saw a lot of loaded box, right? Doug Martin is a good running back. Chuck Sims is a good running back. Insert third guy is probably a pretty good running back, right? Yeah. Jaquizz Rodgers, who just got signed, a former Atlanta Falcon. They wanted to take away the run, but we still have great running backs, and we have a guy in Chuck Sims who broke, I don't know, 36 tackles to get into a 12-yard, I think it was a 12-yard touchdown pass. It was a very short play. But this is a team that now has assembled a tremendous amount of talent on both sides of the ball. What do you guys have? And let's start with Mark on the end down there. What are you most excited about as a and I don't mean as a fanboy, right? Because that's not what you do. You guys are legit journalists. I'm the fringe media guy. What are you most excited to cover because you think it's going to give you good stuff for the fans out there reading your material? What has you excited to watch the game?
Well, I mean, obviously the offense. I mean, that's the easy answer, but it's the truth. I mean, that's what fans love to see. 31 points on Sunday. You know, we could go back and look at the last few years, and I'm sure there's been some 31-point outbursts, but bottom line is this was a different 31 points. This was the first game, high emotion on the field, you know, opening weekend on the road, and they overcame some adversity to win the football game and put points up and answer when they did get down. You know, great point by Scott as far as the Bill Belichick mentality. That is a Bill thing, all right? The further kickoff, if you win the coin toss, try and steal some points going into halftime, and then let's come out and step on their throat and put some more points up in the third quarter. Again, fans love offense, and that's going to sell a lot of subscriptions to Pewter Report, even though we don't have subscriptions anymore.
You're selling them good.
But you can.
No dollars,
you can
though.
I will give you an address if you want to send us some money. But that's going to get people to the website, and that's going to get people reading the stories, because that does excite people. I mean, a 31-30 game, you know, is more exciting than just say, for instance, the Monday night game with the Rams in San Francisco.
That was a nail biter.
Good God, it was just like pulling teeth. It was horrible. It was one of the worst games I've ever sat and watched the entire thing. But, you know, the excitement, the back and forth, people like that. Now, I mean, obviously Dirk Cutter would love to win 31-0. It's not going to happen very often in this league. But the offense, and something you and I, Derek, have talked about numerous times on the podcast since the spring when you restarted this up after you quit being a big baby about Lovie Smith being fired. And we
good paraphrasing.
We talked, yeah, exactly. It was right on the money.
Absolutely.
As I was saying, though, we talked about the amount of people on this team that can do something with the ball in their hands, and there's one ball to go around. Certainly, if Vincent goes down or Mike Evans go down, that really changes the complexity of this offense, and they're going to have to really change things. But if those guys stay healthy, there's still a lot of talent on this football team, even if one of them goes down for a short period of time. Look, you've got tight ends. You've got two capable tight ends that can catch the football in Brate and ASJ. You've got two running backs right now that can run for 100 yards in a game or catch 100 yards worth of passes. You know, you've got two potential 1,000-yard receivers on the outside, and you've got a solid nucleus on the offensive line that kept Jameis Winston upright. You know, there's a lot of talent on this football team, and this is an exciting – Scott and I have debated this before. When has there been more talent on the offensive side of a football? And, you know, we can debate, but probably you'd have to go back to the Super Bowl year was the last time there was much talent. But I say there's potentially more talent right now.
The ceiling is higher. I think the ceiling's higher on this team.
Yeah, I agree.
But I mean, you know, potential, we know what that means. You haven't done anything yet. So they've got to go and convert it. Now, Scott, what are your thoughts on this?
I'm going to take the opposite side of that. I think the defense is something that really excited me in week one. For a couple reasons. Number one, Matt Ryan didn't complete 70% of his passes. I didn't see a single slant, a true slant pass caught on the Buccaneers, which was good.
How about the red zone defense? I mean, they were tremendous in the red zone this week.
That's the huge thing, and that's what Todd Monken said today. When the Bucs were in the red zone, you know, they got touchdowns. When the Falcons were in the red zone, they got field goals.
Right.
So what excited me about really what was, I think, an average defensive performance by a young Buccaneer team that has sprinkled a couple veterans in there, that has a new defensive scheme and play caller in Mike Smith, is they played straight-up defense. They had no takeaways, which is disappointing, but no takeaways and only three sacks. And yet it seemed like the Falcons really couldn't get in the groove throughout the entire game, except for that one touchdown drive where they got the two-point conversion. They had a little bit of momentum right there. But in my opinion, I like the fact that they played straight-up defense, got off the field on more third downs than not, pressured Matt Ryan on that last drive to look like a rookie quarterback with those incomplete passes. Gerald Batts down the last pass on fourth down. So this was by far not the best showing for this Buccaneer defense, right? No takeaways, only three sacks. Very little splash plays. We had a busted coverage on what looked to me like was a zone route where it's basically a switch between Vernon Hargraves and Quan Alexander. Quan didn't get the switch.
Yep.
Julio Jones crossed him and scored. And then the other big breakout play was with the Tevin Campbell. And Mike Smith just, you know, he gambled and he zone dropped Robert Ayers. Robert Ayers on Tevin Campbell.
There's a mismatch there.
Tevin Coleman, definitely a mismatch.
Yeah, Tevin Campbell was an R&B singer from the 90s. But he was solid. He had sensitivity.
Yes. Can we talk?
I like it. I like it. We got talk? Two of them.
Okay. Tevin Coleman raced down the sidelines, got a big chunk of that yard. So you take away, you know, those two plays in the passing game, they really didn't do much at all. That would scare me if I'm Mike Smith. And then the Buccaneers, I think, had a stranglehold on the Falcons' running game. They tried, you know, running Devontae Freeman. They tried running Tevin Coleman, really without any success. So what I liked was kind of an average showing by the defense, but, boy, that was enough to get the job done. What's going to happen when we start seeing interceptions and pick sixes and forced fumbles and, you know, and maybe not an 8-sack game like we saw against the Cleveland Browns in the preseason game, but a 5 or 6-sack game, then what's going to happen? So, mission accomplished as far as I'm concerned with this Mike Smith defense, understanding that Atlanta's not a juggernaut. They're going to face a better offense in Arizona. I think David Johnson scares me more so than Freeman and Coleman. And the speed that you have across the board with the Cardinals, you know, with Brown, with the young kid, JJ, and I can't remember his name.
Nelson,
thank you, from UAB. He's just a flat go-route guy. So we're going to see how fast this Buccaneer secondary is in keeping up with that. But I think this Tampa Bay defensive front can get some pressure on Carson Palmer. Keep in mind, the loss of Jacquez Smith was a big one now. That was a big, big loss in week one. I'm buoyed by the fact that they have Howard Jones. I think he's going to play a bigger role now on pass rushing downs. And Noah Spence certainly has got to come to play because Smith was an experienced guy that could get to the quarterback. And, you know, you start Will Golston, and I love Will, and he had a great game against the Falcons last year. But you start him, and you want to bring in Jacquez Smith on third downs. That didn't happen because of Smith's injury early on. But Will Golston had a zero on the stat sheet. No tackles, no quarterback hits, no quarterback pressures, no sacks. And that has to change from that left defensive end side.
Now, Chris, going into this, that was a good transition to the Cardinals, but let me hear what your thoughts are on the previous game and then transition into what the Cardinals are going to deal with. We talked a little bit about, you know, we benefited from a number of drops in Atlanta as well. Matt had some balls that were well placed that were dropped. I'm one of those guys who thinks Carson Palmer, if he stays upright, doesn't miss often, and his receivers seem to catch it. Larry Fitzgerald, I don't think, is capable of dropping a pass.
Never drops.
So what are your thoughts going into this game? Tell us a little bit about what the Cardinals are going, and talk a lot about that running back that Scott already mentioned, because he's a stud.
All right, well, I want to piggyback off of what Mark and Scott were saying as well, just real quick, to close up positives and kind of negatives going into this game against the Arizona Cardinals. One, the tight ends, which I think you touched on, Mark, which no one really talks about. Luke Stocker played, I believe, 58% of the snaps. Mm-hmm. Never talked about. The deal with the tight ends is every single one of the four tight ends who played a role and played their role. Brandon Myers and ASJ had one catch apiece. Both went for touchdowns. Cam, don't call me Connor Brate, catches big passes on, mm-hmm. on the touchdown drive. And then Luke Stocker does what he does, which is the best blocking tight end on the team. Run defense was fantastic. A couple things that I'm a little bit nervous on. You talked about Will Golston, who was invisible. It's one of my keys going into this game, especially with the Jacque Smith injury. Who's going to step up on that other side? You're going against DJ Humphreys, his first year full-time starting on the right side. Watched him a lot at Florida. You know, is he struggling? Is Evan Mathis going to line up? He's got that foot injury. So a lot of question marks going into this game. Winnable game, but 4 o'clock, 4.05 p.m., you'll be there, Derek.
Yes, sir.
1-0 Buccaneers. We haven't said that since. Was it 2000? 12. Chianos.
Yeah,
Chianos against the 0-1 Cardinals. Here's the thing about Arizona. As down as maybe people have been via social media about the Cardinals, and I understand that the Patriots had injuries and Tom Brady was not playing, they were one good snap away from winning that football game and being 1-0. As bad as they played in that game, one kick, and it's a completely different story, and we're both going in at 1-0. So one key note here about the Cardinals, I mentioned earlier, a very tough stadium to play in under Bruce Arians, and Scott, I know you've kind of referenced Dirk Cutter's kind of a Bruce Arians mentality. 19-6 at home in that stadium under Bruce Arians.
That's a hell of a record.
Absolutely. So we know, you talked about it, Derek, the Cardinals have weapons on offense. One of the key things that I think going into this game and something that the Patriots were able to do, and I'll throw it out to you guys on the panel, what is the easiest way to stop that weapon, which is the offense? What's the easiest way to shut down a team's offense?
Keep it off the field.
There you go. It's keeping them off the field, which is what the Patriots were able to do, a +8 or +9 time of possession. Even with the two fumbles that the Patriots had.
They still managed it,
and they controlled it in the second half, which was huge. They had the ball for 19 minutes to the Cardinals, to what would it be, 11, I guess.
Yep.
And still, they only won that game by 2 points. So the longest possession, I understand the Bucs put up a lot of points this last weekend, but the longest possession the Bucs maintained the ball was for just under 5 minutes in that game. So the Cardinals can score, and they can score quick. So my key number one to this is keeping their offense off of the field, sustaining the drives a little bit, and limiting the amount of touches that those weapons get.
Well, one thing that I'll say, too, is the Bucs can't afford, and sticking with the defense here, they can't afford to have a no-takeaway game again. I think they're going to have to be +2 on the road in this instance, and whether that means, you know, getting two takeaways and not giving the ball away on offense and playing clean football on the offensive side, or, you know, allow for a misgiving on the offensive side as they had last week with Jameis's pick, but then getting three takeaways of some kind. I just feel like the number that sticks out of my head against the Cardinals on the road with those stats you just mentioned, Chris, is they got to be +2 at the turnover margin at the end of the game.
Well, one of the things I think will help us is Carson is not necessarily the youngest quarterback in the league. He's never been particularly fleet of foot. And while Matt Ryan isn't known to be, you know, a mobile quarterback, he has got functional mobility in the pocket, and he always has. Now, when you looked at the Bucs pressure in Atlanta, they were in and around Matt Ryan's face most of the day. He was able to slide sideways, step up, get some more time, release the ball. Still wasn't able to get a win, but was able to nullify a little bit of that. I think that Carson is not going to do that, and that does bode well for our team, especially with the injuries on the offensive line for Arizona as well. So I agree with that. We definitely want to try and keep – I don't want to see Larry Fitzgerald catch 27 balls, and they are not afraid to do it. I can't remember the playoff game. It was against Carolina a couple years ago. He may have caught 40 passes that game.
Yeah.
He's still catching them,
yeah.
You know. So, and the next question we have to do is, he's not one of these guys who lays down after he catches the ball. Our DBs are going to have to show that they can tackle. Chris Conley's going to have to show he can actually play an entire game without going out injured, right? Because we are thin at safety, as we are well aware. And then our corners, you know, it's funny. There was a lot of heat out there, and I mean, the heat is probably because of the crap TMZ stuff, right? But I thought Brent Grimes in general had a good game last week. I thought he had one play where the guy got behind him on the skinny post. But other than that, I thought Brent did well. Brent also is a deceptively good tackler for a smaller player.
Yes.
He locks in, wraps up, and you go to the ground. But all of these guys, Hargraves, who I thought looked really, really good last week, is going to have, you know, I don't know who's going to get the call, but we don't tend to follow people either. They're all going to get a taste of Larry Fitzgerald right in their mouth. So.
But you know what? You know what? This is going back to the optimism column that I wrote. And I didn't put this in there, but I could have. if Arizona does go out there, if Larry Fitzgerald does run wild, if David Johnson does have 100 yards, this is a team capable of matching this team score for score.
Sure.
And it's been so long. And again, let's go back to the John Gruden years where you felt that the Buccaneer football team could match an opponent score for score. And if it turns out to be a 38-35 game or a 42-38 game, you know, the Buccaneers have a chance to win. This is, I don't believe this is a game, or I don't believe this is a football team where we're going to see those Atlanta Falcon Thursday night Lovie Smith type blowout scores. I just don't, number one, I don't think Jameis Winston will allow it. It's not going to fly with Dirk Cutter and Mike Smith. And these guys have too much pride right now and confidence. But they can go out there and match Arizona if by chance Arizona gets hot. And I asked Carson about this today on the conference call right before I came here. You know, they understand how crucial this is. They're 0-1. They do not want to start, and no team wants to start 0-2. You start looking at stats of how many teams make the playoffs. I mean, this is a team that was, you know, one of the favorites to certainly make the playoffs, and some people's pick to go to the Super Bowl. You know, they understand the magnitude of this football game, and losing two at home to start the season off isn't going to be good. So they you know, and they're an experienced veteran football team with a good veteran coaching staff. So that's being said, and Dirk Cutter said it today too. He says, we know we're going to get their best shot. But what I love about Dirk, and something Scott mentioned too, he's cocky, right? I guess Scott didn't really say that, but he and I have said it together. Dirk is cocky. He thinks, I don't give a damn. We'll go. He doesn't believe this team can't lose either. He knows they're not going to go 16-0, as we said. But he thinks they're going to win a lot of football games, and he believes that there's no game on the schedule that they can't win. And I'm not saying other coaches in the past haven't had that, but Dirk, that confidence resonates to his football players.
They actually believe it when it comes out of his mouth. There's just something about it, and I wrote about this in a recent SR's Fab 5. And this is the player saying it, not me, but he has an it factor about him. And that's really what prompted me going back to last year. One of the lessons I learned from Jerry Angelo way back in the day was, okay, you want to get rid of Charles McCray at right tackle? Okay. Well, that's great, but what's your backup plan?
Right.
Who are you going to replace him with? It's easy to say, cut this guy. So you tell me where's the upgrade and when and who, right? So, and that's why crappy players stay in football teams sometimes is because they don't have a backup plan. They don't have that guy. But I saw the Buccaneers have a backup plan in Dirk Cutter. And, you know, when you went in the locker room and you saw the defense struggle to give up, you know, slant passes and you know, points and 70% completion percentages, and then you see the offense and you talk to those guys, I mean, it's like going from, you know, like, what was me, Wendy, to, you know, Chatty Cathy. It's like the defensive players, when you talk to them in the locker room, and I think Mark will attest to this too, it's like you talk to these guys, there was a bit of a dourness on the defensive side of the ball. The offensive side of the ball, they're scoring points. They're having fun. They're a bunch of young kids coming together, you know, and putting points on the board and getting fifth-ranked offense and 6,000 yards. And there's just something about Dirk Cutter that inspires confidence. And, you know, and it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is. But the offense and the defensive players, you talk to them on the record, you talk to them off the record. And I've never seen a locker room buy in as quickly. And when I mean quickly, I mean in the preseason, everybody I talked to was all in. And you didn't hear that under Schiano. You didn't hear it under Lovie Smith. Even in year two of those regimes, you heard it in preseason one under Dirk Cutter.
Well, and like Mike Tyson said, everyone's got a plan to get punched in the face. So while I don't want to see the Bucs going on a four-game losing streak, we don't know how Dirk Cutter and his staff will handle that sort of adversity. And that
True.
Sort of stuff is certainly where you get tested. But definitely there is a swagger that he has. And one of the things that you guys have all said, and that was said in the chat room as well, one of the things that is very clear, when a holding penalty happens on second down that puts us in a bad position, the team doesn't think this drive is over.
Right.
Yeah. Right. They're like, okay, well, it's second and 10 yards longer than it was before. What's the play? Let's go. And that is very, very different. And hopefully we're not going to see a prolonged period of pain to test that metal. Because, listen, I'm not interested in it academically.
But,
right?
But you know where that all goes back to? Again, the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that was really the theme that I tried to say without trying to look like I was Mr. Jameis Winston's agent in that article. Your optimism for this football team revolves around a quarterback because you need that guy under center You look at the teams, the Peyton Mannings, the Tom Brady's, the Ben Roethlisberger's, the perennial playoff teams have that guy that this team, their fan base, the organization, everybody associated with it believes is the guy for the job. And that's the way Jameis – and listen, I'm a Florida State fan, and JC out there will give me a hard time as he's wearing his Gator shirt.
Really?
No, he's totally – no idea. He's totally on board with Jameis. And
such a surprise.
So is Fish. But, you know – there's just – I even as a Florida State fan, I am amazed at how quick Jameis has been able to do what he's done. And I don't necessarily mean stat-wise. I mean his ability to step in and become a leader and be a captain in his second year and to go out again in his second year in the very first game in a hostile environment and end up being the NFC player, offensive player of the week. I mean, you got to go back to Vinny Testaverde being the last quarterback in 1992, was it, or was it 89? I can't even remember, 89. To win that award in the first week. And it's been a long time since the Bucs have had one. I think Bobby Rainey in 2013, something like that, was the last Offensive Player of the Week the Buccaneers have had. And again, it's not just, and you mentioned it earlier, Derek, the way that Jameis comes in and commands a room and he connects with people on a personal basis, you can't teach that.
No.
If you could teach that, I mean, this guy would be a billionaire, right, doing late-night infomercials on how to, you know, win friends and influence people or whatever it is, right? I mean, this guy, if he could market this, he wouldn't have to play football because it's an intangible that few people have, and I don't even have to say I don't know the last one. There's never been a Buccaneer quarterback like that. Already in his second year, there's never been a quarterback who has the charisma and that leadership that Jameis Winston has shown in 17 starts.
Well, and we get to see what he's going to do against Arizona. Go out there, and you know, JC actually just hit me up with a message. The 15-6 record that you mentioned, Chris, is actually 15-1 against non-division opponents. At home. So this is a stout test. Now, you did a little bit of scouting as well. Now, when you look at this offense led by Jameis Winston, we've got the firepower. We've got Vincent, who's looking very healthy, looking very good. You got Mike Evans, who's looking like a beast. We got 17 different tight ends that can all catch the ball. I found it funny earlier, you know, we were talking about the good tight ends, and no one, you know, at first didn't mention the fact that Myers is the one who caught the first, you know, touchdown, which was great. But that defense we're looking at is not to be trifled with. Tell us a little bit about the Arizona Cardinals defense and a man named Patrick Peterson.
Well, they're going to send pressure. That's for one. I liked the way that the O-line from a pass protection standpoint played. I did not like the run blocking at all. I think that's going to be something they're going to have to improve on here.
Chris, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you real quick.
Yeah.
I was feeling the same way, and you've watched the game a lot more than I have. I've only kind of reviewed it, you know, scanning through pretty quick. Dirk, we asked that to Dirk Monday, and he didn't apologize for the lack of a running game. He said Atlanta came into this game to stop the run, and so we had to do other things, and it worked. He says it's going to happen. There's going to be games when it doesn't matter who's back there. Teams are going to be able to stop you. But he also said, as you're mentioning too, it's got to get better.
It's got to get better.
It's got to get better. I mean, there were definitely some assignment errors and some technique errors right there. Guys not picking up the right guy and responsibilities.
Well, again, getting that running game going, I think this week is a little bit more key because if you look at on the left side, if you're on the offense, it's the right side of the offense, is a shutdown quarter, probably one of the best in the league in Patrick Peterson. The Patriots threw at him three times, two completions for I believe it was 13 yards. Completely wipe out that side of the field. You're not going to do much against Patrick Peterson. Now, on the other side of the field is a first-year corner who was actually converted from running back to cornerback his senior year at Texas A&M. Who knows if he's going to play in this game because of how poor he looked against the Patriots. But that's Brandon Williams. If you want to look at a guy that you can take advantage of on that other side of the field, was burned for a long touchdown to gave up another long pass, I believe it was to Malcolm Mitchell, the rookie from Georgia. But if you can expose the Cardinals defense, it's going to be on the guy not named Patrick Peterson. It's got to be that other corner. And, I mean, they're scrambling for cornerbacks. They just picked up a guy from Seattle who got put on waivers. So they're trying to find a guy to fill that need right now. So if you're going to expose this team, and I think, too, if you get the running game going a little bit, I saw the linebackers start to cheat up a little bit when the Patriots would run a little bit of play action. I think it's going to open up the middle of the field for guys like Adam Humphries, guys like Cam Bray, guys like ASJ. But who's ever lined up on that other side of the field? We even saw at the one point the Patriots lined up Martellus Bennett on Brandon Williams. That to me, is an opportunity for the Bucs. I'd be salivating to see ASJ lined up on that side of the field against Brandon Williams. So if you're going to take advantage on this Cardinals defense, it's going to be the opposite side of Patrick Peterson, and I think that's their best chance to get those, like I mentioned before, big moments, those big plays in the game.
Well, and, you know, one of the things we've talked about with Jameis in this offense is they are opportunistic. They're not an offense that's going to say, okay, well, this is the play as it was designed. We're going to go execute this play as it was designed. If they get out there and they see a guy with a foot advantage over a subpar cornerback, rest assured, Jameis is checking to that guy, right? And they're going to take the shot, which is good.
The guy who's in his second overall game in the NFL as a cornerback, played running back his entire collegiate career up until his senior. I mean, that just, you circle that big, but who knows what the Cardinals can do? I mean, they might walk another guy out there. I mean, but that's a clear advantage, I think, win Buccaneers on that side of the field.
You know, I want to go back to Scott's topic, and I don't know if you were about to jump into this, Scott, but the turnover thing we really got to talk about, because that's something that Arizona is talking about right now in their defensive plan. They're looking at opportunistic ways to try and get Jameis to make mistakes. They've got a solid group of Peterson and Matthew back there that can definitely convert over on these turnovers. And when they convert big.
Yeah, they can. And it's going to be interesting to see if Dirk Koetter follows the Patriot blueprint, because what the Patriots did to get their receivers open for Jimmy Garoppolo and give him good windows, good passing lanes to throw, is they did a lot of rub routes throughout the whole game. And that really confused the Patriots. And so you have to wonder, as if you're the Cardinals, you're going back and you're fixing all that to make sure that what you showed on film against the Patriots, the Buccaneers aren't going to replicate. So, and if you're Dirk Koetter, you have to try to incorporate some of those rub routes to try to make sure, okay, you know, let's see if you fixed it. Because if you haven't, you're going to get it again in week two. And those were very effective in getting the receivers open. This might be a game where, because of those matchups that you mentioned, Chris, especially at the cornerback position opposite Patrick Peterson, where you might see the Buccaneers come out in three wide receivers as they did against the Cleveland Browns. And not do as much two tight end sets.
It's very funny. That's exactly what was going on in the chat room. And when you face primarily a 3-4 defense, so that defense does shift around a lot, right?
Yep.
You've got to spread them out.
You do.
You cannot allow them to huddle around the line and make it confusing for your offensive line to know where that pressure is going to come from.
Yes.
So you simply refuse to allow them that advantage.
Yep.
Great. Tell me who's going to cover someone, because I'm going to find my mismatch, and then we're going to keep running that play until you figure something out.
Yeah, exactly. So I would not be surprised to see them come out in three wide receiver sets, even four wide receivers, and walking Braid out in the slot or walking ASJ out in the slot and giving, you know, the Cardinals a real four wide receiver look, but creating one of those big mismatches like you're talking about with a 6-4 or 6-6 tight end against a nickel corner or against a linebacker for walking him out. That's what you want if you're a Dirk Koetter.
I think one of my favorite, I don't think it's been talked about, one of my favorite plays from the Falcons game was the little screen to Adam Humphries where you get out in space, which is what I've been looking for and been so excited about this year. Donovan Smith, Kevin Pamphile, and Joe Hawley out in space. V-Jax had a fantastic timed block on that, freed Humphries. Big play. It was 20-plus yards, whatever it was. Same type of play worked against the Cardinals. The Patriots ran just to James White, the running back, same thing, getting those guys out in space, letting them do their thing and see where it goes. So,
Chris, you mentioned that screen, and to me, that was the play that got Jameis in rhythm.
Yep.
That to me was the spark, the big 20-plus yard pass play that was the catalyst for his second quarter, that was the catalyst for the rest of the game for him. And I agree. And Mark and I, and yeah, I know you guys were at training camp too. How many screen passes did we see? A bazillion.
Absolutely.
They worked on this like you would not believe. And I think we saw one of them in the preseason, and that's it. But they have screen passes to every receiver imaginable, even lining up Charles Sims as a receiver, throwing him that bubble screen. And so they can do so many different things out of it, throwing to different receivers on either side of the ball with different guys blocking. To me, that's really a big part of their game, probably this weekend as well.
Well, and one of the things that, what was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we could neither run nor defend a screen. It was just our Achilles heel on both sides of the ball. We would try and run it, look like the Bad News Bears equivalent of football. And then if another team decided to run a screen, it could have been the Brandon Steelers coming in at halftime running a screen on us, and they were going to get a 75-yard completion. But you're right. It was a point of emphasis. You've got a lot of guys who get out in space, and there's a lot of interesting rules around screen games, especially bubbles, with what you can do with regards to rubs, where the rubs can occur, if the ball is behind the line of scrimmage when it's completed, et cetera. So making sure you drill those things is about making sure that the flags stay in the pocket, which is my transition that I'd like to get your feedback on, whoever on the panel wants to take this. Once again, we've had a situation where illegal formations have raised their ugly head. This is one of those things that drives me nuts. When you talk about eliminating penalties, I know that fans oftentimes are like, well, if it's unsportsmanlike conduct, you rip him out of the game, and that goes back to Scott, your point, who are you going to put in, right? But if you can't get lined up right, we have a problem, right? if you don't know the snap count, that's a problem. What does Dirk Cutter and the staff talking about with regards to penalties?
Well, they haven't really said anything publicly about it. All you can do is just kind of reiterate it to your guys. I mean, again, you can punish them, maybe have them run a little bit. I don't think professional teams really do that. I mean, it's not Little League football anymore. Hey, you got to do 10 up-downs or whatever. But, you know, you just reiterate it. And look, again, sometimes those things are going to happen in a noisy environment when you're going on a silent snap count. That's what the Buccaneers are doing most of that game.
The false starts, yeah, but the illegal formations are one of those things you just can never do.
I agree. But it happened under John Gruden. It's happened under every coach. I mean, it's magnified now because we're watching it and because it happened so often, I think, in the last couple years that I think maybe we're seeing it a little bit more because I watch football games. I mean, it frustrates me when I watch Florida State. I think the same thing. How in the hell can you not know to line up? You know what I mean? You've got to be you're covered up, you're on or you're off. I mean, these are things that go back to basic things in football. But again, we're sitting on our couch drinking two Henry's cider while it's 100 degrees. You know, you got a 30-second play clock. You're exhausted. You know what I mean? Mental.
We're doing our job and they're doing theirs, right? Well,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, because that other stuff's just color, right?
Well, you know, when it comes to penalties, I think that the real blessing in disguise was for the Buccaneers to revert back to their old ways in that preseason opener. That loss to the Eagles, where if you take away the penalties in that game, if they had a normal 3-5 penalty per, you know, game instead of, what do they have, 13 or 11 that game? If they have what we saw, you know, against the Browns or what we saw against the Falcons on Sunday, a more manageable penalty number, they likely beat the Eagles.
Yeah.
But the fact that that's preseason one and everything the Dirk Cutter was saying, don't let the ghosts of the past haunt you, and yet they did in week one is a perfect teaching tool for Dirk Cutter to say, guys, everyone in this room knows we win this game if we don't beat ourselves. First rule of football, don't beat yourself. It has to stop.
Is that really the first rule of football?
It is.
I've looked at every rule book. I've never seen that. Is that really the first rule?
It is the first rule.
I thought it was
number one.
That's from the South Pasco Predators.
That's what Monty Kiffin said.
By the way, pimp your team right now. 3-0.
We're 2-0.
Oh, 2-0.
We're not going to count the Jamboree win.
That's okay. It's like 3-0. You're undefeated. It sounds
feels
better.
Good. Yeah, we have not lost a game this year. That is correct.
And Scott wrote a column after the game Saturday about the optimism in South Pasco Predators land.
I did not.
No?
Should have.
Search and replace. Buccaneers.
No. We're playing the Silver Raiders, the St. Petersburg Silver Raiders, on Saturday, which is a very athletic test for us. So I'll feel better about our team if we're 3-0 coming out of that.
Of course.
But again, though, just emphasizing that point, week one of the preseason, you know, Dirk Cutter, you know, has been drilling. We got to reduce the penalties. And then that's the teachable moment. Guys, see what we're talking about, you know? And then we saw the penalties get cleaned up throughout the preseason. And the Buccaneers didn't really shoot themselves in the foot that much on Sunday.
You know, it's funny. Warren Sapp used to always go back to the eye in the sky doesn't lie. And I think you brought a great point. The best teaching lesson is film. Right, because nothing is more embarrassing than walking in the film room and knowing that you're going to get pointed out, that your dumb move was the one that's going to be the thing that gets called. And worse off is when it's your dumb move that leads to a loss. Right? Because, yes, there's a bunch of other plays. It shouldn't come down to one play, et cetera. But we're all human, and that person feels like it does. Now,
are you speaking for Vic Beasley right now?
I'm not speaking for anyone in specific. But, yes, these things have happened to folks, and it sucks when it does. Now, what we normally do going into a game is we do some predictive MVPs, and I got to give Mark Cook some credit here. Mark Cook's predictive MVPs last week were Mike Evans on offense and Quan Alexander on defense. Quan Alexander may have just recorded another tackle against the Falcons. He may have just randomly hit
and
someone.
Didn't I pick the first Buccaneer sack of the season? Was Robert Ayers?
You did.
Yes, I did.
You were on a sweep.
3-for-3.
You were absolutely.
But no one predicted the first touchdown would come from Brandon Myers.
That's a
nobody.
Good point. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Even Brandon Myers did.
Nope. Exactly. No Buccaneer fan out there did that.
If they did, the line was strong, and they are very wealthy.
Yes, sir.
So let's move towards this week in Arizona, and we'll start with you, Mark, since you're Mr. The colloquialisms I can't use here.
Yeah.
If you are so good at this, let's say. Who's your predictive MVP on offense and on defense? We don't have to do the sack thing because we already know that, David.
Right. Now, I'm definitely going to go with Mike Evans again. I just keep telling people.
Taking risks.
Jay Retcher from 620 goes around before the season starts every year and asks all the media members to give a bold prediction. Last year, I predicted Doug Martin would have, I don't know, 1,350 yards. So I won the bold prediction award from him. Now, but this year, mine was that Mike Evans is going to best Julio Jones on the season as far as numbers go. So far, I'm good. So far, I'm good. So I've got to keep rolling with Mike. I think Mike's going to have another monster game. I mean, I think Mike is starting to feel it. He's got that confidence we've talked about. He and Jameis have seemed to develop a little bit of chemistry, you know, him being able to play the full preseason and being part of all the offseason workouts. And as Munkin said, you know, and Dirk has said the same thing, what he did this offseason to change his body a little bit. I know the big story was Jameis Winston losing weight, but Mike really changed his eating habits and his training habits, and I think we're starting to see it pay off. He's a married man now. He's a little bit cooler head on the field right now. This guy's poised, I'm telling you, for a 1,500-yard season. I think he's going to have another big game, even bigger than he had against the Falcons.
Mr. Reynolds?
You want offense and defense?
No, we'll go offense. We'll go back to defense. We'll wrap it back down. We'll get crafty with it.
You know, I have no idea why. I have no idea why.
Brandon Myers?
I'm going to say this. No, not Brandon Myers. I just think Adam Humphries. I think that he is going to come out with a Cleveland Browns type effort this week because no one's expecting it. I wholeheartedly buy into what Chris is saying about the other cornerback situation outside of Patrick Peterson not being good. And I think I think the Cardinals will kick the ball to him and there will be some return opportunities. I'm not saying he's going to take one 70 yards back for a touchdown,
yes,
as
are.
He did against the Browns. Well, I'm not ruling it out. but I think that Adam Humphries can have one of those Cleveland Brown type games where he is making some real splash plays and making his presence felt more so because I think Patrick Peterson will be trying to lock down Mike Evans as much as possible.
Chris?
Where does Aguayo go? Does he go defense or offense?
We're going to call him offense, but I like the call.
By the way, how about Brian Anger in that game? We didn't give any love to the punter in that game.
No one gives any love to punters.
Well,
they don't deserve any love.
They played a hell of a game. On offense, I agree with Mark, although I also agree with Scott. I think they can take advantage of Humphries in the middle. I like Mike Evans. They line him up on the other side, take advantage of the size. I think he's going to have another big game. So I see a touchdown or two coming from Mike Evans. This time he'll go over the 100 yards. Won't stop at 99. Get over 100. I see a big game coming from
Mike
Evans.
Poor Mike. He's had 99 yards in the last two games. Drives me nuts. It's like, is someone not looking at the stats? Throw him a bubble screen, get him 2 yards. Well, put him at 101.
Yeah, get him bumped over. It would be nice. It's nice to see Mike doing what he's capable of. You know, you guys covered the change in his diet, his body changes, his attitude changes, some of the catches he's making where he's beasting over guys. It's exactly what we saw early on, and it's tremendous to see him do it. Now, everyone else sees him do it, too. And so I definitely expect to see the Cardinals try and take that away, but it's a pick-your-poison thing, which is why I like Scott's pick on Adam Humphries. I don't like picking the same thing someone else did, so I'm going to go to a running back. I normally would go with Doug Martin because I think he's one of the best running backs in the league. But for some reason, I think that the juice right now is in Chuck Sims. I think that feels he is untackleable.
Good call.
And I think you ride that horse until it bucks you, whether you're giving him the ball in the backfield.
That's not a word, but you just made it a word. Untackleable.
Hey, Shakespeare made up words, too.
Yes.
So Bill and I will continue to make up words. Chuck Sims is going to be my offensive guy, and then I'm going to run right back down to Chris, and we're going to defense.
Defense is the guy lined up against DJ Humphries. So I want to see what the lineup is, because will Golston please stand up? Because he was invisible. If he's lined up against DJ Humphries, you've got to take advantage of it. Now, if they move Robert Ayers to that side, I like that matchup. But I think this is going to be a game for the linebackers. I think that getting David Johnson in space is huge for the Cardinals. I like the speed matchup that we have at our linebackers. Quan had a big game, I think, from a tackling standpoint. Week one, I'm going the other guy. I'm going Levante David to have a big game against the Cardinals.
Yeah, I could see that, too. I don't know why. I'm thinking Vernon Hargraves is going to have a Jacksonville-type game where, you know, kind of quiet in the season opener against Philadelphia, then explodes on the scene out of nowhere in the second game. And I think that could happen. Carson Palmer is no dummy. He's going to look at this and say, you know, Brent Grimes, you know, he's a veteran, and he's kind of a, you know, a feast or famine guy. I might get a big play, but I might get a pick here. Alteron Werner, you know, he's a steady Eddie. He's not terribly splash play oriented, but there's this rookie in Vernon Hargraves. Let's see what this kid's all about.
Let's test him.
Let's see if he's the real deal. And whenever you do that, you get opportunities. You get a lot of opportunities. And I think the teams that believe that they can't pick and choose their spots, but want to pick on Vernon Hargraves because he's a rookie, he's going to make you pay. He's going to make you pay. So I think that because this smells like a 40-plus passing game Carson Palmer, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for Vernon Hargraves, and I think he's going to win more than he loses, and come away with at least one interception.
And I like that pick. And one of the things that really stuck out in this last game was the miscommunication, not being on the same page between Carson Palmer and some of his wide receivers. So that's a great opportunity for a cornerback to come in, make a big play, and maybe take it to the house. So I like Scott's pick.
Of course you do. You're
not
a Gator.
Just because I'm a Gator.
Yes, because you're a Gator.
I didn't want.
We know why.
Oh God,
we're not going to bring it back.
Oh boy,
you've babbled about Jameis enough, FSU boy. Relax. It's
but
fine.
Am I wrong?
No, but it's okay. Still, good Lord, bring up Mobile, will you?
Okay, I will. bring up Cheryl and her coffee, her Cuban coffee. As brocatos.
Who's your Mark Cook. Who's your defensive?
I know it's
pick.
Terrible that I'm a Florida State fan. It's been horrible the last few years. Gosh, the horror. I could be a UCF fan, couldn't I, Derek?
You could be.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Did you go there, though?
No.
Okay.
No. I didn't go to FSU either.
I know. It's just like most Gator fans. They've never been on campus.
Well, I've been on campus. And anyway.
All right. So who's your defensive pick?
I'm going to go kind of obscure here. And I'm going to go with Ryan Smith. I'm just kidding. I'm going to go with Chris Conte with two picks in this game.
I knew you were going to say that.
You're going with Chris Conte? That is a strong pull, Mark.
Nah, every once in a while, you just got to throw it out there.
Listen, the guy plays good football when he can be on the field. There's no doubt about it. And I know people give him crap, but
he always compliments my Hurley shirts or my Volcom shirts.
Well, that just means he has poor taste.
Well, listen. Chris Conte had a hell of a game in week 2 last year against the Saints. Right? He did.
He did.
He had a great game against the Falcons that really got overlooked. Zach Shapiro wrote an article. I mean, without Chris Conte making those two tackles, we're talking a whole different thing right now.
It's absolutely true. And it's been the case with Chris Conte his whole career. If he's healthy, he plays good football.
Yes.
But he plays not healthy, right? And his teammates know it, but fans don't. And they think he's playing poorly when he's really playing with one leg or his ribs are hanging out of his chest, right? Or he gets broken constantly. Every time you look back, it's like, my God, why are you on the ground again?
Yeah.
So I love the pick. I was going to go with something really bold like Gerald McCoy, but I think that's too easy. I think that looking at the running game of the Falcons, even though I think they're going to try and move the ball down the field, I think you have to have another monster game by Quan Alexander. He's another guy like Chuck Sims who's playing instinctually. Now, he made some mistakes when he was guessing on some of those things last week, but I'm okay with him failing fast, right, because he is going all over the field at a rate of speed that makes Levante David look like he's a normal speed guy.
He makes mistakes, and yet he still has 17 tackles.
It's astonishing. It's astonishing. So
and
I'm
yes,
going to say
he's faster. I mean, as you know, Gerald McCoy is famous for calling Levante David the Flash. Well, what is Quan Alexander, the blur? I mean, he is faster. I mean, he is the fastest guy. When you watch the film, and Levante David has instincts, and he is a very fast athlete, but he is no match for Quan Alexander. And that's why I predict him to be PeterReport.com's defensive MVP over Levante and over Gerald this year, because I think he's going to be the leading tackler at the end of the year by far. And I think that we're going to see the splash plays from Quan as well.
Well, it's an exciting time from a Bucs fan. You want to say something, Chris?
Mark Cook's pick of Chris Conte is like killing two birds with three stones.
Oh!
That's a joke. Nice. You're going to have to look that up and
that's
figure that reference out.
That's good.
All right, now we're to the part that everyone likes, the score prediction. Everyone enjoys doing this.
No one likes doing it at all.
But we're going to do it anyway, and we're going to go right back down to the end of the table. Mark Cook, are you going to predict the Bucs winning this game? And if you are, what is the score
going to
be?
Yeah, I'm predicting to win this game, and I'm going to say it's going to be, again, another 31-point offensive effort and 28 points for the Cardinals. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth. I think it's going to be a close game, but I think the Buccaneers score just a couple more points or three more points than the Arizona Cardinals do. 31-28. Book it. Take it to
book
the
it,
bank.
Take,
go to Vegas.
Right now, there's someone on the phone with their bookie.
They should be.
Oh, nice.
And my record recently has been pretty good.
Very good. All right, Scott.
Well, I tell you, I like the 31 points as well.
By the way, that's what I predicted last week, 31 points. Go ahead.
31 points, that sounds good. And I think the Buccaneers can achieve that if they take care of the ball and don't turn it over a bunch. I think 31 points on offense. And I think the Buccaneer defense is going to replicate some of their success in the red zone. You know, by saying 28 points, Mark, you're saying they're going to give up 4 touchdowns. So I don't know that's going to happen.
Nah, Jameis will throw a pick 6. Defense is only going to give up 21.
But I think 26 points. I think the Buccaneers will surrender some touchdowns, but there's also going to be some field goals in there as well for Arizona. They're going to come up short, though, by a couple points. The Bucs are going to come home 2-0.
Mr. Fisher,
should we get back to reality now?
No, I'm just kidding.
We Cardinals are not going to – I'm sorry. People are going to throw things at me. Cardinals are not going to lose 2 games at home. I'm sorry. But we'll still be a good showing by the Buccaneers. 30-27 Cardinals.
Fair enough.
Chandler Catanzaro game-winning field goal with a good snap.
What was the score again? 30-27?
30-27.
That'd be exciting.
Nothing to be worried about at 1-1 losing to a good team.
No. Hey, listen, someone's got to lose, right? I am, as you guys are well aware if you listen to the show at all, I'm always going to pick the Bucks because I'm going to pick it with everything going the way we need it to go. I am not at odds with Cook in this regard. I do think it's going to be a high-scoring affair. I think we haven't seen what this offense can do yet. I think as exciting as Atlanta was, I think that it is better than that. I think we left points on the field in that game, and I think that we're going to see 38 points out of this offense. I like 11-point spreads for some reason, so it's going to be a 38-27 game, and there's going to be some two safeties. No, it's not. That's a total lie. But no, I think it's going to be a good game, and I think I'm going to be able to celebrate it in an away stadium for the first time in a long freaking time, yeah, which is going to be a lot of fun.
Well, you were in Washington last year.
I hate you so much.
Sorry. You like that?
You like that? That's funny. You should be his agent.
You like that.
You should definitely be his agent. All right. Listen, I want to thank everyone for coming out to Killing Curly, for listening to this podcast. We'll get it up onto our podcast. I think you guys are going to post it on pewreport.com as well. We'll have it on whatthebuck.net. I want to thank Scott and Mark for inviting us to come out here as well. And
absolutely.
Alicia and the staff here at Killing Curly. It's a beautiful location. Hopefully we'll be able to go out here and do this again, because I thought when we were going to be outside, I was like, God, you may have noticed I'm not the smallest dude. I thought, wow, it's going to be super hot out here. It's going to stink. It's going to be terrible. And it's been beautiful. We've had great beer, great wine. You guys had some great food.
Yep.
So good time. Scott, you got something you want to send everyone off with?
Well, I just want to say thanks for coming out. And I want to thank Keel and Curly and Two Henrys for the opportunity. Appreciate you having us on, Derek, as well. Chris, great to see you at a retirement. Let's do it again. I just want to appreciate all the Buccaneer fans that follow us on Twitter at Pewter Report and on pewterreport.com. We really appreciate the support. It doesn't happen without you guys listening and reading and visiting. So, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you very much for doing what you do. So it allows us to do what we do. That's cover the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I think, like nobody else.
Totally agree, or we wouldn't be hanging out with you this much. Yeah. So it's a good time. Again, thank you guys. Enjoy your drinks. Have some more drinks. Have some more food. Enjoy the specials. And we'll be out here if you guys want to talk more Bucks football. I'm sure you can harass any one of us. Except for Chris.
SR's Fab Five coming this Friday. Don't miss it.
That's right.
Look at that. Look at you.
He's used to my plugs. He knows.
Nice.
He knows
how I do. Good stuff. Thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in to another WhatTheBuck.net podcast. We'd like to thank all of our guests for coming on, anyone who called into the show, all the sponsors we mentioned at the top of the hour, Steakhouse Elite, Bill Curry Ford, Tito's Vodka, and Pepin Distributing. We'd also like to remind you, if you like what you hear, if you've liked what you've heard, if you'd like to participate with us, you can help us in a number of ways. Please go to our website at whatthebuck.net. Join us on social media at facebook.com/whatthebuck. Get in the conversation on Twitter at whatthebuck. We're even on Instagram, predictably, at whatthebuck. Additionally, if you really like what we're doing and you'd like to support specifically the broadcast portion, because almost everything else we do goes to charities via What the Buck Really Matters, please do click on that Patreon link. And think about maybe making this an NPR kind of model where you support the broadcast and can participate at a higher level. We appreciate all of our listeners and all of the people who participate with us in the community, and we'll see you on the next broadcast or at the tailgate. Go Bucks!
Yeah! Yeah!
Scoo! Scoo!
Yeah! 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 Well, like bugs running, man, I think that's all, folks. My man's O's, just shut down another show. Same name, same time for the past 11 years. Guess what? Next week, we gon' be right here. Talking about the Bucks and having a good time. We give it to you straight, don't need to be between the lines. The beat drop hard every time I hit the nine. And if you didn't know it, this is Franco on the rhymes. Yeah. 11 years strong, y'all. It's the What the Buck podcast. My man Derek, they call him Old School. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck. Yeah. It's What the Buck, man. Nothing can stop us, man. It's What the Buck.